The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dormish. I am your host for Beyond, episode 584. I am joined this week by Max Scoville.
Hey.
Brian Altano.
A star is born.
And Zachary Ryan.
What's up?
Hello. Welcome back to the show.
It's been a while. It's nice to be here.
How are you doing off in Switchland?
I'm doing okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Seem to have some games over there.
Yeah, playing some good games.
Yeah, but we're not here to talk about Switch. We're here to talk about what's going on with PlayStation. Of course, we're going to talk about the State of Play that just happened this past week in our weekly segment, News Crunch.
Crunch.
A lot going on.
That always makes me sort of a little bit hungry and also a little bit aroused.
You shouldn't be aroused by a child talking.
No,
and
it's
a
the
guy
it's,
making
it's
the noise of an apple.
The funky guitar gets me randy.
Okay, if you're able and to separate those layers, that's
the word.
One thing.
The word crunch makes me get a powerful hunger for caramel and Krispies.
All right.
Caramel and Krispies were not talked about on the PlayStation State of Play, but they did talk a lot about upcoming games for the PS4 and PSVR. So State of Play was their first attempt, clearly, at a Nintendo Direct to get into it of what was exactly shown before we break down how we felt about the event and the games actually discussed. They announced Marvel's Iron Man VR coming to PlayStation VR in 2019. They announced Crash Team Racing Nitro Fueled is also getting Crash Nitro Kart content. No Man's Sky is getting a full VR support for PSVR this summer. They introduced a new game called Ready Set Heroes, which is a dungeon crawling multiplayer game. They confirmed Blood and Truth is coming out in May. They also announced basically 8 release dates for another handful of PlayStation VR games. They showed a trailer for Observation. They announced Five Nights at Freddy's VR. They took a look at Concrete Genie, where they also delayed it to the fall. They showed the Days Gone story trailer and gave us a story trailer for Mortal Kombat 11. So running down the list, it seems like there was a lot there.
Yeah.
But based on the reaction that I have seen on social media, there has been a bit of a split in how people feel how this presentation went. Mm-hmm. So first of all, before I go into my thoughts about it and how the internet hated those thoughts, I wanted to know what you all thought about the presentation itself beyond the actual content.
I thought the presentation was great. I thought it was really nice, and I'm kind of excited at the idea of this being a regular thing. If this becomes like the Sony version of a Nintendo Direct, I am all for it. But they 100% need to get in front of their messaging and let us know what we're in for, I think.
Yeah, this was exactly what we've been asking them to do, right? I mean, I think we came out of E3 last year being like, what was this like moving stage show across 7 theaters that you guys did and then cut to a video podcast or whatever that was? It was kind of messy. This is a lot more focused. I would have liked to have some human element to it. Nintendo's really good at that. I would say my biggest takeaway here was that it sort of lacked a cohesive theme or focus, and it could have. I think this could have just been a PSVR direct state of play, and they could have done 8 minutes, 12 minutes, and just been like, here's all our PSVR stuff, here's a price drop, let's get everyone excited. The fact that it was that bookended with some, a little more, I think they legally have to put Days Gone at the end of everything. And then the final game they bookended it with, which was Mortal Kombat, which is a known quantity. It was cool. It's a good step in the right direction. I think they set the bar pretty medium height.
I think if they figured out sort of the formatting and they were like, here's what's coming out in the next month, like here are the big releases, like Mortal Kombat and Days Gone are arguably the two biggest games coming out next month.
Mm-hmm.
But if they were like, hey, we've got a PSVR-centric Nintendo Direct, or not, State of Play
we'll
coming up, then we're like, that gives us sort of a clue of what to speculate on. And that's I don't know what's happening. What, I can't hear myself now. They're just filling with knobs over here. That's better.
Sorry.
It's like getting a head cold that drifts in and out.
Yeah.
But no, like I think if they'd been a little bit, because we don't know what this thing is yet. Like, we don't know what a state of play looks like. So we were sort of like, is this going to be a Nintendo Direct? Is this going to be a whole E3 presser? Is this going to be three trailers? It was definitely good, but yeah.
It seems like people's expectations were all across the board on this. And some people were really expecting a give us big reveals, give us a huge announcement, an update on Death Stranding or A Last of Us or things like that.
Yeah, I think that was my takeaway from this, is like, it seemed like weird timing on their part to choose right now and these announcements as their first. Like, I would have waited for something bigger to be like, this is our first sort of direct style presentation. Mm-hmm. Because coming out with this lineup, I think a lot of people were expecting, with a new format, meant bigger announcements. So I think they were kind of setting themselves up to disappoint from the outset.
Sure.
Which is a little strange. And also, as somebody who works year over year on our E3 live show and works on programming and the content of that show, it's very alarming that these major companies are just doing these
their
sorts
own
of things now. So
yeah.
It's like,
sure.
Yeah. Not, I mean, maybe not alarming isn't the right word, but it is definitely a concern.
Yeah. I think instead of getting like a fireworks show once a year, we're getting like sparklers times a year.
We kind of talk about this a lot in the office, about how E3 is becoming less and less of a major event and more of like a fan driven thing.
Yep.
And like, this just goes to show to me personally that this is sort of the trend that we're going to see. I think more companies are going to move in this direction. It's so much cheaper. It's got to be so much more cost effective to create these like micro packages and roll them out multiple times a year than renting out a major theater, booking satellite trucks, like coordinating all the event stuff that needs to happen for these big events and putting together an hour plus of content and programming to roll out to millions of people at the same mm-hmm. time. When you can do it six times a year for a fraction of the cost, it totally makes sense.
It's also a good vehicle to get some smaller known stuff out there that you probably, if you put it out during E3, I remember like when they were talking about like, PS Minis and Wonder Book and stuff like that back in the day, people were like, get this off the screen. I don't want this.
God, Wonder Book isn't a name that I've thought about in a million years.
Remember PT? Remember that was like a thing that we're like, this is available now. And I was like, who cares? Move on to the next stuff.
Yeah. Well, so I think like what was kind of interesting about this is that like without a PlayStation conference last December, without an E3 press conference coming up this June, there was, I wouldn't say unreasonably high expectations for what this state of play was, but I think that put a little bit more weight on them. Nintendo is basically, they put out a bunch of directs, they have a press conference coming up, they don't have their own convention yet, I'm sure they will someday, but they're busy enough. And like, if you look at their last few directs, not to compare because everybody's working on different stuff, but their last two directs, not including the Pokemon one, which was huge in its own right, you know, it took off on the internet, both were bookended with new installments in arguably their second biggest franchise, mm-hmm. which is Legend of Zelda. Really easy to cover that show over on NBC. Whereas this was sort of like, if we knew we were going to get another one of these every month, then it sort of lowers the expectations a bit.
And but I'm expecting one probably every like 3 months. Like I'd expect seasonal updates.
What did they say at the end? It was like,
just throughout the year.
Yeah, throughout the year.
Yeah, we'll
right?
be doing more of these. And yeah, the expectations part of it is so fascinating to me because Max, you were saying, and Brian, we've talked about off the air. I agree. Like the way they announced it in their post implied like, oh, this could be a really big thing. There are the embedded ideas of what a Nintendo Direct is.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, but this has obviously not been conveyed to the whole audience, like when they announced PSX wasn't happening and they announced they're skipping out of E3, those things came paired with Sean Layden interviews where he's like, we don't have enough big things to talk about right now, so we're not going to do those big scale events when we don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So they have had some of that messaging out there, but that in no way gets to people in the way that this announcement post does.
Totally.
I mean, E3,
that should have been part of this.
Yeah. E3 doesn't make sense in its current form anymore because games come out year round. They're not just a holiday release thing. And to do this thing quarterly or to do it monthly doesn't make sense either, because if you're like, we're going to have, you know, a 20-minute thing in April when there's not a ton of stuff coming out, but here's what's coming out. And then they're like, here's the November one. It's going to be 3 hours long.
Yep.
Like, you're going to have to kind of stagger it and plan accordingly. But I like the idea of it being sort of, I think themes are great. I think leaning into being like, hey, you know, we've got some, you know, huge first party stuff on the way, or hey, we're talking PlayStation VR
I think that's my thing, is like, ultimately I think it's the right idea, and I think it's the right call from both like a financial and a marketing aspect or view. I just think that it completely lacks the wherewithal and the personality of a Nintendo Direct.
That's exactly
it. And I think that Sony will get there. I think that we're seeing, you know, as the very first of probably many of these presentations, they've got a lot of kinks to work out, and I'm sure that they'll get there because they've put together some pretty entertaining presentations before and admittedly some pretty weird ones as well. But I think it's just going to take a little time.
This kind of felt like a promotional video that you would run in like a GameStop or a Best Buy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
And like the kind of thing where you can just sort of, you don't have to listen to it, but you just kind of look up and you're like, oh yeah, new games are coming up.
I watched this presentation while I was on a conference call for like on another meeting. Yeah.
I do wonder if some of the like formatting of it was in response to the negative attention they got for the E3 conference last year, which was so like lengthy and indulgent and did have people talking, but it just went on and on and on instead of being to the point. And this was like so to the point that it then sucked any personality out of it.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, Sony or PlayStation specifically has a bunch of really great people working there. There are a lot of really personable people who are great on camera, who are great on stages, who can get up in front of a live show even when things are crashing and breaking, and they can do 20 minutes of pacing back and forth, you know, not even reading off a teleprompter or making it look natural. So having them look direct to camera, I know people would be like, oh, you're ripping off Nintendo Direct. Who cares? Just get the message.
I don't think they invented that, talking directly to a camera.
No, definitely not.
No, and I mean, let's not to sound like a Nintendo apologist or anything, but you can watch NBC every Thursday at 3 p.m. or listen to it. But
I'm muting your mic.
Thank you. Everyone has always copied Nintendo, right?
Yeah.
Nintendo has always done something first, and everybody sort of filed suit. So it totally makes sense that they would pioneer this direct format, and then everybody else would follow suit. I think that one thing that Sony lacks right now is the ability to put those people out in front of camera or really identify who those people are.
Yep.
We see Sean Layton every year at E3, but like we don't see anybody from Sony Santa Monica. We don't see anybody from Sony Bend to really like as a spokesperson or even a second, like a vice president or something. It's always just Sean or just voiceover or, you know. So
I think they should bring out somebody in that Crash Bandicoot costume. I don't care if he's not the mascot.
Give him the megaphone. Bring it back. Why not?
I have an important announcement to make. I'm leaving IGN to be the official.
You'd be great because you'd be so sweet.
Yeah.
You'd be in the Nintendo parking lot with that megaphone. You'd be like whispering.
Hey, you guys make great games too.
Yeah.
I don't want to be mean about it, but we've got some great VR titles on the way.
I really appreciate if you try PSVR.
Oh, security's here. I'm sorry about that.
No, Zach, I love that. I think like the idea of elevating those people, and we've met them. They've been on our live shows here. Like they're all great people working at those studios. Every one of those studios has outspoken, talented, smart motherfuckers, and like it'd be really cool to see them out there.
I mean, we've had some of them on the show. Like Corey Barlog's a great example. Brian Inahar.
I don't understand why Brian and Corey wouldn't be like the front runners for that position. You know what I mean, like obviously they have other work to do. Like, you know, they're working on some first-party games. Also, they just seem like those guys are like household names amongst PlayStation fans now. I don't understand why they wouldn't be chosen to deliver that messaging. Yeah, they could get it up there and read a script, and it wouldn't take
like
too much time.
They could come there and just
cycle.
Be like, hey, we're excited for the State of Play to do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, exactly.
And
it'd be funny if Brian Inahar came out and he was like, you know, I love Spider-Man, but you know who else I love? Iron Man. Here's the game about Iron Man made by a different studio. I think it'd be really funny.
That'd be
funny.
Great. I think there are a lot of,
you know, I love Spider-Man, but you know who else I love? Genies. Let's take a look at this genie and Concrete Genie.
Some have called Spider-Man the original Concrete Genie. Some, not many. Anyway, here's Concrete Genie.
I've spent a lot of days at Insomniac, but I would only spend 5 nights at Freddy's. Here's 5 nights at Freddy's in VR.
God of War has lots of combat between mortals, but you know what else does? No, I mean, like, to really focus on the positives here, I think it's awesome that they're doing this. I think the fact that, once again, we're going into a new year going major confidence in PSVR as a platform. That's huge. It shows they're not giving up on that. Again, I would have loved to see that bookended with a price drop. There are like a bunch of people who are just kind of like, when do I buy this?
Yeah,
you know?
That they didn't announce a sale.
It's so funny because like I saw so many reactions on Twitter that were just like, oh, it's just PSVR games. And it's like, hey, you guys are missing out.
Yeah.
Like, those of you with that attitude, like, you're missing out on really cool stuff because you've dismissed this entire part of this platform.
We had two Game of the Year nominees last year.
That's right.
Either PSVR solely or very heavily involved.
I think it's very easy for gamers to go, like, that's expensive and stupid and I don't want to wear it and I'm gonna cast it aside. But, like, it's not going away.
Look at the reaction to Stadia last week. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to get us too far off topic, but, like, nobody knows what that thing is really about. Yep. But the reaction was overwhelmingly negative. And it's like, hey, a year from now, you might be looking at it like, oh, this is actually a, like, viable concept and I'm interested.
Well, so. I think a lot of gamers reacted to that like if like the government was like, hey, we're taking your guns.
Yeah.
Like that was a lot of people being like, Google was like, you don't even need consoles or games anymore. And people were like, fuck you, I don't. And so to that, I understand a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was it last week we just went kind of overboard talking about No Man's Sky?
Yeah.
And I don't regret that one bit because them just being like, oh, by the way, it's entirely PSVR compliant is
it's
like
a completely different way to experience that game.
Yeah. I've been hoping
a brand new game.
I've been hoping they would do that since I think before they launched when I was like, I think it's going to be a VR game.
Yeah.
Lo and behold.
Yeah. Finally. That was, I think, one of the biggest announcements. And had they fronted this is a PSVR, state of play, and bookended with Iron Man and No Man's Sky.
Oh, God, yeah. It's about setting expectations, right? Like, nobody gets disappointed in Nintendo Direct when they don't announce a new Mario game when it's a Pokemon Direct.
Yeah, and they're really good about that, and it's always just, like, two sentences in an email to everybody, to the press and to the public, and they'll go like, hey, we have a Direct coming out this Thursday. It focuses on Fire Emblem and Nintendo 3DS, and you're like, wow, I just moved the goalposts right down the field on what this thing could be.
Whereas this announcement was PS4 and PSVR games, new games. Game announcements and gameplay footage.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay, Days Gone for gameplay footage.
Yep.
Probably Concrete Genie because it was supposed to come out in the spring, but maybe Death Stranding or maybe The Last of Us. Like that, there is an inborn like, oh, they could do this.
Yep.
And they didn't.
Yep. Wait, one question to you guys. Do they do one of these at E3?
Not at.
You don't think so?
Before?
Yeah, I would say before. Yeah. Probably before.
Because they said
before would make a ton of sense.
They said no press conference. But
they did pull out of the show floor too, as far as I know, right? Like,
yeah.
I think they just said they're not going to E3 at all.
Mm-hmm. Were they doing? Excuse me if I don't remember this right. Were they doing like pre E3 stuff? Who was doing pre E3 like reveal stuff?
What do you mean?
Like there was some.
Oh yeah, Sony last year did like a week of pre E3
right
announcement,
like Judges Week stuff, or
not even Judges Week. It was just like it was trickling in like the things that would get lost on the way. So that's super smart if there's gonna be stuff on the floor, whether it's at their I guess they don't have a booth, but like if they have, you know, third party stuff, if they want to announce things, if they want to just kind of signal boost things that are out there, then they get in front of the messaging and it's sort of like, here's what to look for. Like, check this out.
I mean, if you consider the promotional space on a website like IGN, right, you have five or four slots in your like front page and then a bunch of like blog roll tiles. And when you're a company at E3 and you're announcing on the Monday or Tuesday of a 5-day run, you're competing for those, let's say 10 slots with every other developer and publisher at the same exact time.
Yep.
So Bethesda announcing Fallout 4 in the middle of October or whatever, or like Red Dead, right? Like puts them outside of that conversation. And then all of a sudden you see IGN and Kotaku and Polygon with five stories about Red Dead and four stories about Fallout and not, you know, this competing space.
Yeah, I mean, so E3 made a ton of sense in 1995 when video games came on cartridges. Right. There were about 75% less of them, and they only came out between September and December.
And you read about them in magazines.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Those things that they sold at Walgreens.
Like, it's also like if you look at like the resources that the average YouTuber has to even cover this, even cutting out traditional media people, they're going to make all big videos. Yeah, please no. But they're going to make all their videos that day. We're YouTubers too, you know.
Yeah.
We have a little YouTube channel. But they're going to run out of steam.
Watch that. Sorry.
Stop.
Side note: we published the Los Angeles episode of Fast Travel last year in the middle of the Ubisoft press conference of day two. I have no idea what call that was. That was tough to watch.
Yeah, it's a weird one where like had they still done an E3 press conference and all of this was part of it, you would have been like, why did they have an E3 press conference?
Totally.
So I understand. And then someone on Twitter said to me, they were like, why didn't they just put up seven different videos on YouTube so I could watch the trailers for these? And it's like, you wouldn't watch them.
Yeah, you nailed it.
They do need to set up expectations properly, but they also know that if they just put up seven trailers in the morning, no one's going to watch five of them.
Well, that was like that Nindies Direct thing. You watch every one of those games because you don't know what's going to come next. There's that sort of surprise box to it, which I love that. I really love that. And I've said this before, and the same thing, digital storefronts do the same thing, where it gives your game the same amount of real estate, whether you're Zelda or Mario or Crash Bandicoot or The Last of Us or, you know, the Genie.
I went to the Podcast Beyond Facebook group, which is facebook.com/group/podcastbeyond, to ask people how they felt about the first PlayStation Direct. Got a large variety of responses. Connor Weir just posted a cat shaking its head no gif. Dan Kuhl said, I loved it. I think it's funny. People thought we were going to get surprise announcements when we basically know everything else coming this gen, other than some release dates that the devs themselves don't know yet.
Right.
A lot to be hyped for if you own VR. No Man's Sky made my pants tingle, and you can quote me on that.
What does that mean?
I don't want to know.
It's weird. Wash your pants.
It's weird that the pants tingle.
Do you think there's some kind of debris in the pants?
Also, these are like sentient pants with nerves. I don't understand.
Are they fleece lined? What's going on?
Muhammad Hadid said, just okay. Observation and Concrete Genie got put on my wish list. Already in for MK11, Days Gone, back to back next month. The VR stuff. When you know the PS5 is coming soon and VR would be an order of magnitude better than what we have now, it's hard to put down the money for one just now.
Though. That's a really good point. Yeah. I mean, we don't know what that looks like. We're still controlling those games with Move controllers that came out in 2010.
Yep. Use a different type of plug.
Yeah, exactly.
I love PSVR. I'm so ready for a different one.
Me too.
Yes. Yeah.
Me too.
Even with I'm excited for, I think they showed 9 or 10 VR games. I'm excited to play at least 8 of them. But I would love for that tech to just keep advancing.
If they really launch a truly wireless version of that system with updated controls, goddamn.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Very cool. I mean, that's a game changer.
I know.
If they did that, because the PlayStation name is so sort of ubiquitous, right? I think that the idea of making a streamlined wireless VR headset would completely change the way that people think about not just PSVR, but VR in general.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, it's the best-selling VR kit currently, and that's with big players out there constantly iterating on their systems and taking out, massive ad revenues, taking over entire trade shows. Oculus is, that has become a formidable name, but PlayStation is PlayStation.
Yeah, the Oculus Quest coming out being wireless. I'm curious to see how that moves the needle as well. Mm-hmm. They announced PSVR has sold through 4.2 million units.
That's much.
March 3rd, which is great. The last update, I think, was 2 million.
Yeah. Yep.
So clearly that holiday sale saw a huge spike. Mm-hmm. But that is still a small segment of the 90 plus million PS4
owners.
That's
what, 5% or something?
Yeah. It's a small drop.
It's 40% of all the Wii U's sold too, which is weird when you put it that way.
Yeah,
that's a catastrophic failure, effectively.
Looking forward, what do you all want? Just to go quickly back to it, what do you all want to see either in the cadence of these and the format of these? What is one really big thing you want them to keep from this initial one? What is something you want to see them change, Zach?
I think highlighting a broad spectrum of titles. Something like Concrete Genie and something like Mortal Kombat in the same announcement or the same timeline is really interesting to me. But I think that the biggest miss for me was just the lack of personality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Brian, what about you?
Yeah, just a cohesive theme, I think, or at least something, some umbrella-shaped thing where they can be like, these are what this is, what you can expect, and there might be some other stuff, but something like that. Just to go, it's PSVR, it's indies, or it's here's what all of our third-party friends are working on. Something like that.
Yeah. And Max?
I think it was really promising. I think a little more personality wouldn't hurt. I think once they've found their cadence and found their, their strong suit, they got to realize that there is inevitably going to be people who tune in regardless of what it's about. But to make stuff that's sort of, for the more casual fair weather people being like, hey, here's a special Death Stranding, whatever. And then it's, make it more targeted.
Yeah, I would love to see the forum take whatever steps it needs to. So maybe they do a Last of Us state of play for 10 minutes, 1 month down the line, but another is just PSVR, things like that. I would love to see them do that. But I did really love seeing Falcon Age and Trover Saves the Universe and all these things that I think look really great, but probably most mainstream audiences would not have seen otherwise.
Right.
So we'll see how the state of play is going forward. But for games you can actually play right now, we obviously want to talk about Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice. I know there's a lot of love for this game in the office. I have not gotten too far in it, and I'll get to that in a little bit. But I want to take the temperature of you guys about how you're feeling about it, obviously in regard to Bloodborne as well. So we've talked a lot about that. Zach, would you like to start?
I love Sekiro so much. I'm a FromSoft guy. I came into it at Bloodborne and then have gone back and played Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2 and 3 and multiple times. And I love their games. I think they're a singular developer, and Sekiro is no different. It really takes the formula that they built on in Bloodborne and sort of turns it on its ear and refines it further. And it is a fantastic game, and it is so super challenging and so frustratingly difficult and ultimately so incredibly rewarding and just gorgeous to look at. I'm loving it. So
yeah, I'm
just like McDonald's.
I adore this game. I'm in the same boat. It's tingling my jorts, as that man would say. Mm-hmm. No, it's a what it's doing really well that I wasn't really expecting is it's giving me that same sort of palpable fear that I had turning corners in Bloodborne of being like, what's here? What's around the corner here? Like, what is this building? What's, you know, am I going to get surprise attacked? I have an interesting relationship with it because I sometimes sit down to play it and feel like I'm a god and I'm awesome. And then I come back like the next day or a few hours later and I forgot how to parry and I like had a counter. And I find that really interesting. But I've been playing it like I played Bloodborne, which is running up and down the first few or three or four areas repeatedly to grind like crazy to improve. IGN has a bunch of really great videos out about, you know, stuff you should do first and like cool tips. One thing I will point out on the first skill tree in that game, if you save up to the third level, there's something that costs 5 points that gives you health for every time you sneak attack someone.
I ground out last night and bought that on your recommendation.
It's immensely
changes the way
helpful.
I play the game.
Yeah,
like it's so much better.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like you're just constantly bleeding out like a stuck pig. Like you always have a chance to sort of like recuperate a little health. Going into boss encounters, I find myself like not entirely great at countering most of the time. It's rhythmic and I'm getting better at it, but I do find that there's a lot more room for error than I thought there would be in terms of like cheesing some of these bosses and some of the, like, you can kind of just jump in the air and be like, and stab them a lot and back out.
It's funny. I've been playing it. So I guess we should probably back up. So for those of that aren't in the know, mm-hmm. Sekiro is a ninja action game from Software that is, you know, sword and board essentially without the board. Like you're blocking and deflecting and parrying, like, and you get these things called death blows and stuff. But I found myself dying over and over and over again to this mini boss last night, and it was getting really super frustrating. And I've been doing my best to play without looking up strats on bosses. And this is the second time that I've been like, I have no idea how to beat this guy. Like, I'm just gonna look it up. Like, I have to look up like a tutorial video or something. So I found a tutorial video, and the answer was literally just don't stop attacking. Like, just run in and just attack as much as possible, as fast as possible.
Right.
And you'll eventually break this guy's parry and get through. And I took him out on the next run.
Wow.
Yeah, I must have died to him 15, 20 times. And I watched one tutorial video and was like, oh, you just got to just beat the hell out of him. Got it. Okay. And just ran in and did it. You know, so it's like the way that you approach each enemy, each boss especially, is so different. Because unlike Bloodborne, where it was like, or Dark Souls, where it's so much about like parrying and positioning yourself correctly, like that weighs into it as well. But even more so than that, I feel like a lot of the bigger enemies, a lot of the mini bosses and stuff, have specific weaknesses.
Yeah,
you know, like it's almost like an RPG where like fire is weak against water or ice is weak against fire, something like that, where each boss has like a specific, like this boss you can take down a lot easier if you have the loaded axe, or this boss is a lot easier if you have the fire barrel.
And it's really cool how there's like people in the world who are just hanging out talking to each other, and you can eavesdrop on them and they'll give you clues. There's a lot of like, I came into this game like all of us did with FromSoft PTSD, which was expecting if you don't tiptoe around ledges, you die instantly. Every time, like, there's no training. Every time you get killed, you lose everything you've ever had. All that kind of stuff. And what I found was something that is as difficult as the rest of those games, but has a lot of the sort of, I wouldn't say cheapness, but it just has a lot of quality of life improvements that make the moment to moment a lot better. You can fill up a meter and basically get a point to upgrade your skill, and nothing can take that from you, which is insane. That's never happened before.
Well,
usually,
if you die, you lose half your experience.
Yeah, but not if you have a point locked in already.
Right.
So that basically you fill 1 meter, that meter is locked, and then you go to fill the next one, you lose half your experience from there. But even then, there's like a 1 in whatever your number chance is that you'll get lucky.
Right now, my percentage is 7.
Yeah. It gets lower and lower the more you die.
Right?
Yeah, because you get this like dragon rot or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I love all that. I mean, the fact that there's a training guy in the game that teaches you how to fight. They've never done that, you know,
because they don't tell you where he is, but
yeah,
he's,
you know,
there.
You got to find him. I didn't know about that.
Mm-hmm.
How much have you played?
I don't know. I've sunk a few hours in. God, I'm bad at games, like really, really bad at games. And I'm this one. I can't tell if first of all, it's a really good game. Like, I can just recognize that right off the bat. And I completely agree with everything you said, Zach, about FromSoft. Like, I've completely fallen in love with Bloodborne, but it's also sort of instilled me with some habits that are hard to break when approaching a game. And I mean, it's weird because you have to have both sort of sharp reflexes, but also be patient, which seem almost counterintuitive to me.
Yeah.
This is an incredibly fast-paced game, but if you rush things, you'll get your ass handed to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I found that I was talking to you about this, Jonathan, but like the my weird thing is like I'm sort of impatient with things that should be done at like a fast pace, but not too fast of a pace, which I guess is just sort of mashing buttons. You know, not just like blindly mashing, but mashing the same button. And yeah, it's like you got to find your sort of the right cadence and like kind of approach things with sort of a good kind of confidence. And it's also it's strange to see stealth and completely wide open, fast paced traversal thrown in here.
Yeah,
yeah. The mobility of it really struck me.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah. There's an area that I'm in right now. I'm in this castle where you can literally Spider-Man around the castle.
Yeah.
Like with the grappling hook, you can just chain grapples and you don't have to touch the ground.
It's crazy.
Incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate that too, because it's like when you're grinding in Bloodborne, I feel like there's always the chance that a guy is going to hit you in the face with a shovel or like a pickaxe and kill you. Whereas in this game, grinding's been really fun for me because I have memorized enemy locations and the exact amount of time it takes one of them to go, huh? And then he gets stabbed. And you can sneak up and chain basically and kill one in the back. And you can one hit almost every enemy in the game except for mini bosses, which is really cool because it makes it so when you're going through areas that you've been through before, it's not really tedious and you feel like there's a reward for it.
And you can jam through them too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like last night, the area that you're in now, I know that area so well that last night I just did it on loop like three or four times to get to that fifth level so I could buy that upgrade that you were talking about
earlier.
That's
awesome.
Yeah. And it's just like I was listening to a podcast and just jamming through this one area like four or five times. It was great.
I really appreciate all of the like weird, mysterious, spooky horror stuff in this game. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's like headless demons and, you know, giant animals. And there's also funny shit like giant fucking roof roosters that kill you.
Oh, those chickens are the worst.
Yeah. There's this one area in the Harada Castle where there's just like 15 chickens all hanging out and there's just dead bodies everywhere and you're like, what did you guys do? And the first time I like came up to one of those, like, I didn't know what it was. I just saw like this like weird, it looked like a coat on like a cliff and I walked up, I'm like, oh, is this like free clothes for my, and it was just like, run! And jumped in the air, jump kicked me. It's like the crows in Bloodborne.
Yeah.
And it started clawing at my face. And then there's that weird, like in that one area, there's like a husband and wife chicken where you kill one of them, the other one runs out. He's like, what have you done? That was Harry.
I didn't know they were married.
They're married, yeah. Wow. There's rings on their hands.
Yeah, you can find, when you kill one of them, you find the lore in the item.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was going to say, is there an audio log that you pull?
They've been dating since high school.
It took me a cool minute. You have to like vacuum up the money.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
You don't have to hold the button that hard, by the way.
Okay.
Like I've
just been mashing on it and just probably not doing it the right pace.
No, I was playing that game like fucking Luigi's Mansion for a while where I was just like dun dun, dun sucking up.
Oh yeah.
You really only have to hold it down for like a second and then it all comes to you. But
it took me also like there's no tutorials menu in there. Like there's no like help section, which
there's
I was
a training
like,
man, I told you.
Okay, that's a man.
Yeah, that's
like
a tutorial.
Again,
man.
I haven't found it. You go to the menu, like, and I know that it's sort of get good and figure it out. And a lot of people have said, like, oh yeah, read the digital tutorial for Bloodborne. It tells you things the game should have told you. But it's like this is definitely
I never did that. That's a thing?
I don't know. You figured it out. You talked to people.
No, I wish I had done that.
Yeah.
They're still like, when I played Bloodborne, I'll get an item and I'm like, I don't know what that is.
Well, I mean, that is straight up the beauty of FromSoft games is that they are dense and sort of opaque.
Obtuse.
Yeah.
Yeah, opaque, obtuse enough that they require you to talk to other people, whether that's your friends in real life or strangers on the internet,
mm-hmm.
who will give you different pointers and tell you stuff and you kind of compare notes about how things work. And it is entirely recreating that sort of playground feeling of, you know, old games like Legend of Zelda or Castlevania or Ninja Gaiden, where it's like, what did you do here? How did you do this?
Yeah, the three of us talked for 20 minutes yesterday in what felt like a probably less cursing, but a version of like the conversations we would have had if we all went to middle school.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. where Zach was like, "There's a fire castle and you can get you can get an axe," and I'm like, "Cool."
Yeah, and I felt really cool because I'd found that, but you didn't.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
Yeah, I saw your eyes light up. You were like, "Oh, you haven't
been to the castle." Yeah. It's weird though, because what I love about Bloodborne and in what I've seen of Dark Souls, which I bought on Switch and I sort of regret.
I just did the same thing.
It's really hard to.
I own Remastered on PS4 and played through it last year, and then today when I was when I was playing, or last night when I was playing Sekiro, I was like, I could play Dark Souls.
Mm-hmm. I think this like Goldilocks scenario though, where I've like sort of finally figured out Bloodborne, and I'm like, I'll check out Dark Souls. I'm like, this is too slow, and I get Sekiro. I'm like, this is too fast.
Yep.
And I also still haven't finished Bloodborne, so I should probably just go play that. But
yeah,
the thing is, Bloodborne is like it's fast, and it. I love the way you have to explore it. It has this like very labyrinthian feel to it, and like Dark Souls has kind of the same vibe. With Sekiro, it feels almost like cheating to be able to kind of jet around it, and there still are sort of hidden pathways.
Yeah. Oh, it's crazy to me. Like there are so many hidden pathways, mm-hmm. and last night I was playing through an area that I was like, oh, this feels weirdly familiar, and then I turned a corner and realized that it's just the first area from the game, except it's been repopulated by different characters, and like I just entered from a different side. I was
Oh, wow,
how did I get back here? Like, yeah, it's really wild.
There's something I think with, I mean, people say like one of the things you need to get good at with FromSoft games is remembering where enemies are. Mm-hmm. Like that's just memorization, which I kind of adore because that doesn't come down to reflexes. I'm good at memorizing things, but when you can just jet around so much, it feels like it almost you're less likely to sort of ingrain those patterns in your head. Like if you're, I've gotten turned around, mm-hmm. but not in that like, oh God, I'm lost. It's more like, wait, I overshot where I was going. Like
right.
I jumped off a big tower and landed on a tree branch, and I'm like, wait, I'm back where I started. Mm-hmm. What do I do? And I feel like because of the speed of the traversal, it makes me almost sort of impatient to like take my time with the enemies and grind. And
there is a very specific tension in this game that I haven't necessarily felt in other games, other FromSoft games. Part of that I think is because of the dragon rot. Like the more you die, the more people in the world get dragon rot, and mm-hmm. it elongates a quest later in the game where you have to like cure all these people, right? So
what?
Yeah. So the people in the world get dragon rot, and you can beat the game without curing it, or you can go and figure out the way to cure it and fix all these people. But the more times you die, the more people in the world get it, and the more people you have to seek out and cure.
Right. Right.
So, or that's my understanding so far.
I've currently cured everybody, but then I went and fought like Juju, the drunken puker, died like 20 times. Yeah, now they're all sick again.
Every time that I die, I'm like, okay, I've died at least 25 times, so like I understand that there's more people out there that are getting the black lung, and it's my fault. Like, yeah.
You know what sucks about this game? They called it Shadows Die Twice. Shadows
die at least 16 times.
Shadows die infinite.
Yeah.
I do think it's awesome that you can die two times in this game, sometimes three. Because the first time I got killed, and it was just like, wake up again. And I was like, wait, what? And like, if you wait a minute, a lot of the men in the game are just like, we got him. And they turn around and you're like, haha. And you stab them in the back.
That is one of the coolest mechanics.
Yeah.
I feel like it is completely underselling. Like it's people haven't sort of, I think, wrapped their heads around it properly
Yeah. It's like multiple layers of risk reward.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's really cool.
Yeah, depending on like when you decide to come back.
Yeah.
Totally affected by it. Yeah. So I've played maybe 3 or 4 hours of it. I'm still very early, just getting through the Harada estate, like the first memory sort of thing. Played a little bit of the entry area. And I'm like kind of resigned to the fact that I will probably never play through a FromSoft game.
Yeah.
There's this weird like the patience that you need to be able to deal with its pace, whether it's very slow or very fast or just right. I feel like I don't have that patience currently because when I hit that wall and I'm like, I just keep dying and I just keep dying and I just keep dying. I have 10 other games I could play. Mm. I have 20 movies I could watch, or I have all these things. Like I haven't gotten to the point in a FromSoft game yet where I feel that sense of reward for having fought through it.
So you and I were texting about this weekend, right? Like the actual real world dragon rot of playing a From Software game where you play the same area or fight the same enemy so many times that you get actively worse because you're getting frustrated or your reflexes are off.
Yeah.
Every boss you beat is a load of laundry you didn't do.
That's right, yeah. But it's like the ability to, and this is something that hit me really hard on Saturday because I was trying to beat the second boss before I had fought the first boss. I just didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to beat this boss for well over 2 hours. And then finally I was just like, I have to play something else or I have to do something else because like obviously what I'm doing here isn't working.
Yeah.
And so I took a break and came back the next day and upgraded some of my stuff and went back and fought that boss and did it in like 2 shots.
And it's like a different story when you do it, 'cause you feel like a different person. And like, that's what's cool about this game is that it's in Bloodborne. I will grind and level up, and I do this in Dark Souls too, and I will dump a bunch of points into some stat and kind of hope for the best. Like I'm just sort of just like, oh, what's arcane shoes? we'll get those, I guess. And like at the end of the game, they're like, you're 14 points short to use like the magical hat. And I'm like, I don't know what I did wrong. I always feel like I'm building the wrong character.
Right.
And then people are like, oh, did you know about the hard cap, soft caps that you can do? And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. This is confusing for me. Whereas in this game, I can be like, oh, I unlocked a move that lets you do four stabs when you jump. And I'm like, I understand that.
Sure.
Yeah, and so there's like this quantifiable buildup.
But also, you can pause it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the most interesting part to me about Sekiro is like, this is the first FromSoft game where, like, you know, the meme around FromSoft is like, get good.
Yeah.
But this is the first game where, like, you actually really have to get good.
Yeah.
And you can buy 15 different move sets or ninja moves or whatever, but if you don't know how to utilize those, if you can't look at the way your opponent is standing or see an opening in his attacks or whatever, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, you can launch that attack and still get your ass whooped, right? And there's no, since it's not online in the same way that the other games were, you know, like, I have no qualms in saying, like, the only reason that I beat Bloodborne the first time through was because I summoned somebody in to help me defeat that last boss. And there's bosses in Dark Souls where I did the same. That doesn't exist here.
Yeah, you don't
have
that
option.
There's
a legitimate concern where I'm like, okay, I'm having this much trouble on boss number four.
Yep.
When I get to boss 12 or whatever, am I going to have the right stuff to like get actually get past that boss? So.
Yep.
And that sort of worry freaked me out with, because I did die enough to get someone to have Dragon Rot, and I was like, oh, am I screwing my game over so much that I'm early enough? Should I just like restart the game?
I did do that. Yeah. I did restart it. But then now so many people in my village have the rot that doesn't even they got the rot, man.
Do you guys need to jet?
Yeah, we got to go.
Sure.
Thank you, Brian and Zach, so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, nice anytime. Before we continue the show, Max and I will. Where can people find you on Twitter?
I'm at Twitter, I'm on Twitter at ZacharySD.
And Brian?
I'm at Agent Bizzle, and if you are in Boston for PAX East this weekend, come say hi. Come to our GameScoop panel.
It's on Thursday?
That's Thursday.
It's on Thursday, yes. Yeah. So this will be up
in one of the theaters.
In one of the theaters, yeah.
Anyway,
you'll find
thank
it.
Thank you guys so much.
Love you.
Bye.
Max, I wanted to keep talking with you about Sekiro for a minute.
Let's wait till they leave.
Oh, you just want to...
secrets.
Go on, then. Get out, then, you rascals.
I hate it.
Mm. All right.
So how do you really feel?
Oh, man, I suck so much.
That's my fear. No, I'm so bad at it.
Here's the thing. I feel like this is a game... I'm like really conflicted about it because I've reached a few stopping points where I'm just... There's that scene in Superbad where Michael Cera is like playing like Time Splitters or something. And he's like, why did they even make the game? Why did they make the game? You can't play it. You can't win it. And he just like throws a controller. And I'm like, that's 100% how I feel.
Yeah.
Where I'm just like, first of all, it feels like it is... difficult in ways that I am specifically tailored for me to suck at it. Like Bloodborne, I definitely kind of sort of made my peace with and figured it out. And I'm like, oh, this is hard. But at least like when I need to, I can call in one of the bloody buddies by ringing a funny bell and they come in and they, you know, do my
They'll
work
help
for
you
me.
Out, yeah.
Yeah. You're using your lifeline. Here there's no option for that. And on top of that, like the world of Bloodborne is fascinating to me. It's full of monsters and horrors and guys with pitchforks and stuff. And I'm just not into samurai stuff.
Right.
And playing it, I'm like, it's making me weirdly more excited for Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, there's a bunch of stuff. I like the monsters in Sekiro. I think, I don't know, like there's some of the architecture's cool, but like there's something that just doesn't grab me in there.
Sure. The ballet of like swordplay, I feel like Ghost of Tsushima, like the little gameplay we've seen, will almost be like an easier version of Sekiro in some ways.
Which is great.
Yeah.
You know? Like, because I'm totally with you where, like, yes, I'm fighting, getting killed by the same guy like 9 times. And it's not even a boss. It's just like a man.
Yeah. Yeah. There are just guys out in the world. And I'm like, I just can't get the timing down. And I'm like, I could go play The Division or Baba Is You or watch a movie that I need to go or like play with my dog. Like there are all these things. And I'm like, is it okay to just give it up sometimes?
Yeah.
I feel like it probably is.
I mean, the weird irony of a series of games or, you know, not a series, but a bunch of games that are sort of all about the redundant, the repetition of death is that you have to spend some of your actual life getting good at them.
Yeah.
And I mean, if I had a PlayStation and $60, I would, and I was like, I was like in jail or on an island or didn't have anything else going on. I'd be like, hell yes. But sinking more and more times in something like this, where it's not even a time sink in like that. Oh, I'll go. It's like, I mean, you could say like Red Dead or Breath of the Wild are time sinks because they're massive, huge, sprawling worlds. But it's a time sink that's it's so much about repetition and about precision. And some people are really into that, and I respect the hell out of that.
Totally, yeah. It's one of those things where like people on staff who love it or people in the audience, like when they love something like that, I so appreciate it, and I can see why this game and FromSoft are well-respected. I just don't think I will ever be able to like have the attention span to want to get good at them.
Yeah. A friend of mine raised an interesting point, which was that if they put button cues in as like a training wheels mode.
Oh, yeah.
It wouldn't actually change the difficulty of the fights, but it would make it a little bit easier to kind of parse what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, even if it was like a crazy fast button press thing, like that's one of those, that would be a UI thing.
Yeah.
That's like whenever this person's in this position, the little, you know, X pops up or whatever.
Yeah. Something like that, I think, would help me so immensely, because it is that thing of like right now where I don't know how I'm going to have to react when I show up to a guy who I haven't seen before. And I don't feel the impetus to be like, let me learn how to deal with him first and then I'll do it. I'm just like, no, I just want to attack him. Like, why can't I just break his parry and go? Like, there's something about like, I don't want to take the time to deal with this one guy, because then I know I'm going to have to take the time to deal with another guy just in that same way.
Yeah.
And then probably get killed by a chicken when I'm not looking.
Exactly. And then, I mean, you always kick yourself and you find out there's some stupid, obvious thing you should be doing
exactly.
from your friend. And then you're like, I mean, it's hilarious because like Zach and Brian and I had sort of almost, we all cross-reference different things from each other that we should be working on or should be doing or whatever. I'm like, there's a training guy. And Brian's like, there's a flashback sequence. And it's just, I don't know. It makes you want to go back to it.
Yeah.
Like it's almost like a viral gameplay loop.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always think of this with playing arcade games where, you know, you have 25 cents and you go and you pump it in there and you're like, I'm going to try this. And you, or even like a carnival game where you're like, I'm going to try to, you know, shoot the water gun at the clown's mouth and blow up the balloon fastest. And you do it at the time and you get the pressure on and there's this sort of panic to go with it. And then you go away from it. And while you're, I'm not always thinking about carnival games, but like in your head, you're sort of passively being like, how do I do better at that next time? And you might go and still screw it up again, but there's this kind of like you're thinking about what you did wrong. And I think that that's what gets its hooks into so many people with Microsoft games.
That's fair. So do you think like, because obviously you've continued with Bloodborne. And I know you were saying like the setting of Sekiro doesn't inherently interest you in the way that something like Bloodborne does. Do you think like having those conversations, are you going to want to keep going back to Sekiro? Do you see yourself like hitting a wall and just saying forget it with it? Or
I don't know. I don't think I've hit the wall quite yet.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see how I feel in coming weeks because there's other stuff coming out.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I want sort of a more passive time sink, there's, you know, Days Gone to mess with.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, I also still, I've got this feeling where I'm like, I'm far enough into Bloodborne where I want to finish that. And that's a lot of work. And it's also, I feel like it's, I will be legitimately impressed with myself if I finish Bloodborne by 2021.
Really?
Because I go through phases, and this isn't just with a game that are difficult. Like, I did the same thing with, I think I did it with Red Dead. I did it with, I reach a point where I just need to stop because I'm sick of it.
Yeah.
Like, it's like when you get 2/3 of the way through a burrito and you're like, I'm saving the rest for later. And it's just too big. It's just, there's too much there. I did it with Witcher. I did it with Phantom Pain. Some of my favorite games ever where I'm just like, I had to put it down, walk away, do something else, you know, for like a matter of weeks or months. And then I always feel like a scrub because I come back and I'm like, you know, it'll be like the fact that I'm like, hey guys, I'm back into Bloodborne. Everyone's like, hey, it's 2019. That game is 5 years old. What are you talking about?
But even still, it's totally one of those things for me too. I wish games had like a really great succinct like previously on, but of like mechanics.
Oh yeah.
Like, here's what you need to do in order to be good at the game again, because you played 100 hours.
Dude, I jump back into Breath of the Wild and I have no idea how to play that game anymore.
Yeah. I never finished Breath of the Wild. I got halfway through like the Divine Beasts. If I go back to it and I want to, I'm just going to restart. Cause like,
I think it's a smarter idea.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you retrain yourself.
Yeah. You get the adventure a little bit more.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't see myself spending the time to complete Sekiro as needed. I'm also curious. It's an Activision published game. They are.
Yeah.
I mean, they make some of the best selling games in the world. Like, they're sort of known for being like, what do people want? I'm wondering if they will patch in a difficulty shift in any way or any kind of accessibility thing, or if they were kind of rolling the dice being like, how does an incredibly punishingly – because I would say the skill set required to play something like to get good at Sekiro and complete it is the same as like – I don't know, like finishing – or not finishing, but like prestiging Call of Duty.
Like, yeah. Like the masters of Call of Duty.
Exactly.
There is a skill level there I will never attain.
Yeah. I mean, they have – I mean, even with like Blackout and stuff, like that requires you to be good at a game. And yes, a bunch of the people you're playing are 13-year-olds, but like, you know, there's still like somebody in there who's much better than you, most likely.
Yeah. It's fascinating to me, like you were saying, its place in Activision's catalog, because like right now, if you take out – they don't have Destiny anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They have Call of Duty, obviously, and that will continue in perpetuity. They have Sekiro now. And then they have They made some remakes of Crash and Spyro, but maybe probably won't make more new ones.
Like, I mean, we think of Activision as a publisher as being sort of the most sort of accessible and casual stuff out there. I would say, you think Call of Duty, you think Skylanders, you think they're you know, Blizzard is part of them, you know, like it's.
And King is owned.
Oh, yeah. No, too. Candy so, Crush. Yeah. Candy so like they make arguably the most casual games on the planet, and then suddenly they buddy up with the Get Good Company.
Yeah.
So it's an odd choice.
Yeah, I'm crazy. I'm curious to see the life it has, because obviously like the critical acclaim has been great for it. But yeah, I'm very curious. There's a lot of people in this office who absolutely love it. And then there's some people like me who are like, I'll accept that other people love it and I'll play something else for now.
Yeah.
But it's exciting to see.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. Moving on. Is there anything else in the world of PlayStation going on you want to talk about? It's just you and I in the room.
Yeah. Move on. Yeah, they just bailed on us. They had to go. What are they ranking? Like the top 20?
The top 25 Switch games.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so we have to rank the top 25 PS4 games.
Do we?
Yeah.
Top 24. We don't get. Do we see top?
I think 25.
I don't know. Those are always weird because we do these weird checkups. We had somebody tweeted us the other day who was like, "Hey, I just got a PS4. I've only had Nintendo console since 2007. What have I missed?" And I'm like, a lot.
There's been a lot of games. Yeah. It's always fun ranking them. And we did the last ranking when you were gone. So we put Kiwami 1 on the list.
As yeah.
Like, oh, we'll give it to you. But then you're like, Kiwami
2. And I yelled at you guys. Yep. And everyone's like, 0 is better. And I'm like, you're right. And then people, I don't know. It's a long story.
It's always fun to do. But those lists change. We do them, I think, every 6 months or so. So there will be an update coming soon.
And
Look forward to that.
You, dear listeners at home, are ever stuck with a new system and don't know where to start with things, go check out one of those lists because they are updated and maintained.
Yes, yeah. We very much keep them even after a little bit of the life of the console to do like final lists. Moving on, want to move on to another memory card segment. We have one from another listener of the show. And again, thank you so much. A lot of people have been sending in. You can send them to beyond@ign.com. Please put memory card in the subject line so I know what they're actually relevant to. But thank you to everyone who's been sending them, sharing personal stories of their lives. Really appreciate it. That's obviously what we want the segment to be about. And this week's we have from a listener named Tyler who wrote in. Max, would you like to read Tyler's letter?
Sure. Hey, folks. So my memory might come across sad, but believe me, it's a good memory of mine. Growing up, I was very much into Twisted Metal. I played literally every single one. Absolutely loved the franchise. Well, when I was about 10, my parents went through a real nasty divorce. My mom walked out on us, and I wouldn't hear from her. I wouldn't hear from her 12 years later. My dad was left to take care of 3 kids during this difficult time. My dad decided to take me to the mall, just him and I. We walked by an EB Games. I saw a huge poster with half the face of Sweet Tooth plastered over a black banner with the words Twisted Metal Black written across. I never read gaming magazines at the time, so I had no idea what was coming out. This was such a surprise to me and my dad. My dad clearly saw it in my eyes how happy I got. He said to me along the lines of, I need to get something in here. I was so confused because why would he need something in there? He doesn't play games. Sure enough, he bought a copy of Twisted Metal Black and gave it to me. One of the greatest memories with my dad and this franchise, even though the game was extremely dark, it definitely made me happy. Sorry for the rant, but hope you enjoyed the story. Holy crap, that's adorable.
Yeah, I love that. I love the idea of like a dad being like, I need to get something in here. Like that's all he could come up with on the spot.
Yeah.
Was just this vague.
Like, I love that. Yep. It's like, I have to go in here. No, that's, I would say that's the sweetest thing about Twisted Metal. Like that is seriously
sweeter
like,
than Sweet Tooth.
Sweeter than Sweet Tooth. No, that's like that's adorable. Yeah, I had a story. I feel like I don't know. Should I could save it for another time.
We can if you want to.
Yeah. No, I have like I have just such a sort of love affair with Metal Gear.
Yeah.
That goes back. Like I've thought about those like boss fight books series.
Yeah.
I've thought about like trying to write one for Metal Gear Solid 5. I feel like it's a weird thing to just sort of contemplate in a podcast, but like not so much even the sort of a technical breakdown of it or like a deep dive, but like a memoir associating sort of surrounding it and just the, no, screw it. I'll talk about Metal Gear.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So Metal Gear, I don't even remember the first time I sort of encountered it, but my best friend, Chris, had it and he was like really into it. And I just remember sort of, you know, like you hear words that just sort of sound, you know, you're like, you get used to hearing them. Metal Gear Solid. And I was like, I never thought about like, what does that mean? What does the namesake mean? I didn't know any other Metal Gear games.
Yeah.
And then for whatever reason, it just hooked me. And I was just getting into anime at the same time. So like this intersection of like cyborg ninjas and like sort of American movie aesthetics. And like the fact that it was like, I was like super into, I was really into like military hardware as a kid. Like okay. I watched a lot of action movies and was like really into that whole thing. And for them to be like, yeah, this is sort of like The Rock, except there's like animal-themed superheroes. I mean, it's sort of like anime-infused G.I. Joe kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so I think I like started sort of watching him play it as like he was in the middle of the game, and I got increasingly invested and sort of did my own research, and I think I started my own file and started screwing around. Was terrible at the game because I'm bad at games, but messed around, and then kind of just got really into it myself and started like at the time I think I was saving up to buy a PS1, but my mom was super anti-violent video games, so she wouldn't let me get anything rated M for mature. Especially something that was about military stuff and guns and things.
Even though you were into it as a kid, was that just like self-interest, or did you have toys and stuff? Or
I managed to get like, you mean like Metal Gear stuff?
I just mean like military, if she didn't want guns.
So that was the weird loopholes. I would check out like books from the library about it. There was an eyewitness book about special military forces equipment that weirdly enough reminded me when the Phantom Pain came out, the whole weird menu of like gun customization and like paint your Jeep pink and, you know, pick out new camo outfits was so reminiscent of that, that it felt like specifically this is a game made for like fifth grade me. And it's, I don't know. So I would read up on Harrier jets and like, you know, submachine guns and watch True Lies repeatedly and stuff like that. And then, I would like draw pictures of like, you know, high tech gear and robots and crap like that in my notebooks. And so Metal Gear became like my big fixation, and I would just had to play it at my friend's house basically. And then we heard murmurs of a sequel. And to this day, I don't think I've ever been as excited for a game as Metal Gear Solid 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was like the summer before, it would have been right after freshman year. And I did like, I was, you know, getting more and more into anime and, you know, into Gundam models and stuff. And I think like the summer I was at camp, the trailer for Metal Gear Solid 2 dropped. And this was like early on going on IGN.com.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, you saw it via like a small
QuickTime file. And my friend had like cable internet, so we managed to like download a high res, you know, probably 480p video of it.
Yeah.
And then we had to like install DivX to watch it. And we would just watch it like repeatedly. And that was all stuff from like the tanker level. And before I went away to summer camp, I bought this issue of PSM, PlayStation Magazine, that had the Joe Madera cover of Snake and Olga Gurlukovich and like Revolver Ocelot on it, and I obsessed over that article. Like I looked at all the screenshots, and I remember I had a CD of like Burn music, and I remember sitting on a bench at my artsy fartsy summer camp with my Discman, listening to the ending theme of Metal Gear Solid 1 and drawing fan art of Snake and like going into the computer lab and getting yelled at for printing out pictures of like Yoji Shinkawa artwork and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I got back from summer camp, and I was actually moving to California. I was in Connecticut at the time. I got back from camp, and it was sort of this like sad end of the summer where my mom was like, yeah, we got to pack up. We're leaving. And I was like, can I spend the night at Chris's like one last time? And so I went over to his house, and you know, we're just like, what should we do? And he's like, let's beat Metal Gear, dude. Let's just like power through. Let's pull an all nighter. And so we put in Metal Gear, and we sat down and we played through the entire game.
Oh wow!
And at about, I think my mom was coming to pick me up to literally drive to California that day at probably like 8 a.m. or something to get an early head start. It's like 4:30, 5 a.m. It is dawn, and we are bashing our heads against Metal Gear Rex. And my friend had one of those like off-brand, not PlayStation controllers.
Like a Nyko.
It was Mad Cats or something. Yeah. And he's just bashing his head. We're just exhausted. We've been eating junk food all night. And he's fighting Rex, and he just dies. And I heard that stupid like Gray Fox cutscene was like, after Zanzibar. And he just like takes a controller and just one-handed just hurls against the wall, and it explodes into like a million pieces. Plugs in a second controller, beats him first try, burns at the end of the game. I probably cried or something, but it just ended. I got in the car and then drove to California. And then that was like August 2001. And Metal Gear Solid 2 was coming out in November 2001.
Yeah.
And I was like super into it. One of the first things I ever pre-ordered was the McFarlane Toys Solid Snake figure, because I didn't have, at that point I had a PS1, but I didn't have a PS2, so I couldn't play it. And I had, This other friend who did have a PS2, and we like bonded over geeking out about video games and stuff. And I was like, dude, you got to get Metal Gear Solid 2 when it comes out. And he's like, oh, is it, what's it about? And I was like, oh, it's give me a minute. And so like we ran it, and he was like, you know, he's a nice kid, but he wasn't like, we weren't into the same stuff really. Like he was like a casual weeaboo pretty much. Mm. I went over to his house and we rented it. I remember just like being like, holy crap, like looking at the manual and the car to his house. We popped it in and we played through all the tanker stuff, which I knew like the back of my hand because we played the tanker mission demo a whole bunch.
Yeah.
And we get to like the riding stuff and I'm like, what is any of this? And I think I wound up just being like sort of overwhelmed and like I just like started crying. And he was like, dude, what's wrong? Like, what's wrong with you? I don't think it was specifically like the ride and twist. It was more just like, I don't know, something that just hit me. And it was just like, yeah. I was just like immensely homesick and I missed my best friend. And this kid was like, he's a nice kid, but we just, we weren't like,
it wasn't the same.
And so I just kind of didn't play Metal Gear Solid 2 when it first came out because I didn't have any means to. And, you know, he played it and he's like, it was cool, I guess. And I was like, you don't have any appreciation for this. and then the following summer, my best friend came to stay for like 3 weeks and just screw around, and he packed his PS2 in his bag, and the first thing we did the first night he was there was just pop in Metal Gear Solid 2 and burn through it in one night. It was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so awesome.
And that's like why it's sort of cemented as like my favorite game ever.
Yeah.
I
mean, there's like so much, probably a therapist could have like a field day with just like the act of like playing that game the night that you're leaving to go move across the
country and
completely change your life. Like that's obviously such like a transfixed moment for you.
Yeah.
And I can understand so much why you love that series to the extent that you do.
And it's funny now because like he's sort of my buddy Chris, he was, you know, hung out with him this last summer, and now I'm like more into games than he is. Like the joke I always said was like he had video games and I'd go to his house to play his games, and I always had like more toys and Lego and stuff. And he wound up getting a job doing the like cartoon illustrations on like Lego boxes and like you know, little like Lego webcomics and stuff. Yeah. And I wound up talking about video games for a living. And I'm like, did we get like Freaky Friday? What happened?
You swapped when you moved across country or something.
Yeah. But it's
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Of course.
I'm glad you decided to talk about it.
Yeah. No, I mean, Metal Gear was sort of my entry point into video games and anime, and that's a huge, you know, fundamental part of my life. So I'm it'll be interesting to see what the hell Death Stranding is.
Yes, when that game finally comes out at some point, maybe we'll find out about it in a state of play.
Hell yeah.
Anyway, Max, thank you so much for sharing that. And if you would like to write in with a memory of yours related to your PlayStation history, remember you can write in beyond@ign.com with the subject line memory card, and we'll be sure to read some of those on the show each week. Before we wrap up, just a little bit of housekeeping. If you do have other questions that you want to write into the show for Rapid Fire, obviously with the State of Play and Sekiro this week, didn't have too much time for those, but you can write in at beyond@ign.com. Please put Rapid Fire in the subject line so I know what it's related to and don't think it's a random PlayStation memory. Also, because obviously now we are an audio show, if you didn't know about that, you can find us on basically any podcasting app that you use. You can find us on Pandora, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, a whole host of other services. If you're listening to us on there, please be sure to rate us and subscribe to us. It really helps the show out, especially now that we're like a decade old, the show itself. Those feeds have been sitting around for quite a while.
Oh, yeah.
Help us beat Car Talk on the charts. Other than that, as Brian mentioned, he's going to be at PAX East this weekend. We do have a PAX East IGN panel that's going on, but in addition to that, we'll be covering everything big that comes out of that show. Obviously, Gearbox won't stop teasing things, so we'll probably have Borderlands 3 to talk about next week. And for reference,
I think it's going
to
be Duke Nukem forever and ever.
You think so?
Yeah. Forever after.
They would do that. I wouldn't be shocked. We also, because the show is recorded on Tuesday and posted on Wednesday, we will probably have missed the announcement of PlayStation Plus free games for April, so we'll talk about that next week. But other than that, Max, where can people find you?
I'm just Max Scoville on Twitter and on Instagram. If you want to see my Gundam models I'm still building, they're over on my Instagram.
All of the model work you've been doing is amazing.
Thank you. I'm building a Metal Gear right now.
Oh, okay,
yeah, very cool. Yeah.
Like from scratch or from...
No, there's a kit. A friend of mine got it and was like, I have no idea what to do with this. And I was like, I'll help. And so I'm building a Sahelanthropus.
Oh, awesome. I'm excited to see it fully come together. And I am at JM Dornbush on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me there to obviously be talking about Kingdom Hearts and my good pup, Loki.
Hell yeah. He's a good dog.
He's pretty great.
Plug his Instagram.
His Instagram is at Loki God of Cute.
Nice.
So you can find him there. We haven't been posting recently because he was a little sick for a week or two, but he's on the up and up. He's all good now, so we'll be posting a lot more there. Anyway, this has been Beyond Episode 584. My name is Jonathan Dornbush. I am your host, and I am joined by Max Scoville.
Last survivor of the Nostromo, signing
exactly.
off.
Thank you so much.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.